1.2 million Americans have now been canceled by their insurance companies.
Canceled your show.
And Futurama's been canceled.
Canceled.
Canceled too soon.
Is officially canceled.
Be canceled twice. His launch pre-order bundle was canceled. Do we know it's a his?
Have been effectively canceled.
And abruptly canceled.
From Target is canceled.
Or unceremoniously canceled.
Plan was being canceled.
The cabal has been canceled.
Look at the role of the Rothschild family.
Money and power.
Monsanto and a few other chemical companies.
Culling the population through eugenics is their answer.
The World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, IMF, and the World Trade Organization.
These are the most disgusting people on the face of this earth.
Or they control the information.
The powerful few people who run this planet.
They're not as powerful as you think.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Now brings you Castle with Cabal with Stephen Roberts. Stephen Roberts. Stephen Roberts.
Red or blue?
Yes. Good morning, or good afternoon, or good evening. Where, whatever the case is, wherever you're at listening. I am Stephen Roberts, and this is Castle with Cabal on Shake and Wake Radio, and PSN Radio, and also SoFlo Radio. So I do want to say first off, before I forget, that all the stations are listener supported. So if you'd like what we're doing here, please consider donating. Andy sure could use it, and I know all the other stations could too. I am going to continue reading The Real Anthony Fauci, Bill Gates, Big Pharma, and the Global War on Democracy and Public Health. And I do wanted to say, I find it quite interesting all the time, more and more every day, a lot of these mainstream, the creepy old man over there in the District of Criminals himself said COVID was all over. It's all over, just in time for the November midterms. It's all over. But then they'll bring it back when the midterms are over. I'm sure. They will resurrect this scam and some other scam too. Most assuredly. We all can use it, Andy. We all can use the donations. I guess I'll go back about a half of a paragraph since I started out a paragraph and then stopped at it before I could finish it. Last week, despite Nuthrax's failure to win FDA approval, almost half of the strategic national stockpiles, $500 million annual budget prior to 2020, went to emergence to anthrax vaccines. A cost that, according to the New York Times, left the government with less money to buy supplies needed in a pandemic. Some guardian angels with invisible hands seemed to catch the El Hebrews every time they stumbled. In March 2021, two federal officials anonymously told the New York Times that 1 year the government increased its order of emergence main anthrax vaccine by $100 million after the company insisted it needed the additional sales to stay in business. At the time the order was announced in 2016, the federal vaccine stockpile reserve already had enough to vaccinate more than 10 million people. The stockpile has long been the company's biggest and most reliable customer for its anthrax vaccines, which expire and need to be replaced every few years. After that, the cards really started breaking for the El Hebres. When Cadillac left the federal government, the El Hebres did not forget the man who rescued them from bankruptcy and possibly from arrest. In the summer of 2012, Fouad El Hebre made Robert Cadillac managing director and part owner of his biodefense company, East West Protection. The company received Pentagon backing that year to build a U.S. biodefense site in Utah in partnership with HHS. CEO Bob Kramer told Forbes, "It was designed to prevent a future pandemic. With El Hebre financing, Cadillac funded a company, RPK Consulting, which provided consulting services to Emergent until 2015. The firm paid Cadillac $451,000 in 2014 alone. In 2015, the El Hebres bought out Cadillac's shares in East West, allowing him to take the post of Deputy Staff Director of the United States Senate Select Committee on Intelligence. 2 years later, President Donald Trump nominated Cadillac to become Assistant Secretary of Preparedness and Response, ASPR, an office within Health and Human Services. During his confirmation process, Cadillac neglected to disclose his financial entanglements with the El Hebres on the Senate nomination forms. The El Hebres apparently anticipated a windfall from Emergent from Cadillac's new posting. In July 2017, 4 days after Cadillac's nomination, Emergent announced that it was acquiring the rights to the smallpox vaccine from Sanofi Pasteur, the government's previous supplier. On August 3rd, the Senate confirmed Cadillac, and sure enough, although the U.S. taxpayers were now paying his salary, Cadillac never really stopped working for the El Hebres. And that year, Christmas arrived early for the Lebanese arms dealer. Immediately after his appointment, Cadillac maneuvered deftly to move management of the strategic national stockpile, which he had conceived and created from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, to his own office, giving him authority over all acquisitions for the 7 billion contents. $7 billion contents. As soon as Emergent completed this acquisition of Sanofi and Sanofi smallpox jab, Cadillac moved to increase the government's stockpile of these worthless and dangerous vaccines. Sanofi Pasteur had been charging the stockpile $4.27 per dose and had 5 years remaining on a 10-year government contract worth about $425 million. The El Hebres initially sought only the modest price increase, but Cadillac generously finalized a sweetheart deal with his friends and former business partners, doubling the 5-year term that the El Hebres had requested to 10. Cadillac also doubled the number of doses per year, from 9 to 18 million and gave the LA Braves twice the price dose that Sanofi received. Cadillac's new contract with LA Braves promised emergent $9.44 per dose in the first year, and that figure rising annually throughout the contract term. In the end, Cadillac awarded the LA Braves a 10-year, $2.8 billion no-bid contract to purchase their smallpox vaccines. The stockpile was already overflowing with smallpox vaccines in 2018. The CDC reported on its website in June 2019 and continues to say that the stockpile already had sufficient smallpox vaccine for every American. Cadillac explained that his large purchase was necessary to keep the production base warm. Another way of saying to keep the LA Braves fat. Cadillac wrapped his gift with a red ribbon, Cadillac's brazenly corrupt announcement that the stockpile had no longer fund. The stockpile would no longer fund Emergent's competitors. Emergent BioSolutions received more than $1.2 billion in contracts from Cadillac during the Trump years, with millions more coming from NIAID and DARPA. Cadillac's brazy approach inspired awestruck admiration within the pharmaceutical industry. In March 2020, President Donald Trump, HHS Secretary Alex Azar, formerly Eli Lilly's president and pharma lobbyist, designated Cadillac to lead the department's response to the COVID-19 pandemic. Cadillac's appointment was a signal to Big Pharma of the impending orgy of ransack, pillage, and plunder. Naturally, the LA Braves would enjoy the king's share of booty. That same year, Cadillac invoked the emergency use authorization to purchase $370 million worth of the LA Braves licensed and unlicensed anthrax vaccines. 2020 was the year with the largest sales of Emergent's anthrax vaccines to date. After the FDA authorized Johnson & Johnson's COVID-19 vaccine for emergency use in February 2021, Cadillac pressured the pharmaceutical giant to sign a $480 million contract with the LA Braves to perform the manufacturing of Johnson & Johnson's COVID-19 jabs. Forbes headlined, "Little-known publicity trade company given massive deal to manufacture one-shot COVID-19 vaccine." By June, Cadillac's BARDA upped the ante with another $628 million gift to Emergent BioSolutions for scaling up the production of targeted vaccine candidates. Emergent signed separate deals worth hundreds of millions with AstraZeneca and Bill Gates's Novavax to manufacture vaccine doses at its Gaithersburg, Maryland factory. A March 7th, 2021 New York Times expose about Emergent's crooked relationship with the government reported that $1 billion in payments to the company for anthrax and smallpox vaccines took up almost half the Strategic National Stockpile's budget. Emergent had become the number one vendor to the stockpile. To finance these windfalls for the LA Braves, Cadillac needed to short other stockpile supplies. By the time the novel coronavirus emerged, the stockpile had only 12 million N95 respirators. Cadillac also scuttled an Obama-era initiative to spend a relatively trivial $35 million to build a machine that could produce 1.5 million N95 masks per day. To rationalize their inventory gaps, Cadillac pled poverty. The New York Times reported shocking shortfalls in the productive gear for healthcare workers, ventilators, and masks, just as the COVID-19 crisis called for them. Well aware of the situation, Cadillac was unwilling to free up money by reducing the supply of anthrax vaccines. The El Hebre's second sugar daddy, Dr. Anthony Fauci, was also rained down mana on Anthony Fauci was also raining down mana on Emergent. As the beginning of the pandemic, Emergent signed a development deal with the NIAID for a plasma-derived therapy. Dr. Fauci aimed to incorporate the company's COVID-HIG product into one of NIAID's clinical studies, with initial funding of $14.5 million coming from Cadillac through BARDA. In return, Cadillac supported Dr. Fauci's pet project. Moderna, the mRNA jab keeper with Dr. Fauci and Bill Gates, considered their holy grail. In mid-April 2020, Cadillac arranged for BARDA to provide Moderna up to $483 million to accelerate the Fauci-Gates vaccine's development and manufacturing. They amounted to about half of what BARDA doled out to all of Moderna's competitors combined, including Johnson & Johnson, Pfizer, and AstraZeneca. Hello. Shoot. Is everything still okay? I hit something wrong there. I thought I closed out my sand broadcaster, but it looks like I didn't. So tell me, is everything still okay? Guess I'll have to wait a few seconds. Okay, it's fine. I had a little box up there in my broadcaster, and I hit the exit button for that little box, and I thought my broadcaster went away, but obviously it didn't. Now I'm going to have to find my spot again. That's... Well, I'm pretty tired today, so nothing is to be unexpected, I guess. Cadillac was also generous to Bill Gates, arranging a $1.6 billion grant, the largest to date, from Operation Warp Speed to Gates' biotech selection, Novavax. Although the company based in Gaithersburg, Maryland, had never brought a vaccine to market in its 33-year history and was then on the verge of collapse, Gates and his obedient minions at the Coalition for Epidemic Preparedness, CEPI, had placed a bet on Novavax's technology, which uses moth cells to pump out crucial molecules at a faster rate than typical vaccines. Cadillac's generosity with his warp speed wampum caused Novavax's stock to surge 30%. John J. Trezzini, Novavax's chief business and financial officer, said the company did nothing to inappropriate, but acknowledged that it used its connection to Gates to help win the deals. Speaking of, where was it? Well, I just mentioned the town a minute ago. I was wondering how things are going over there in Hyannisport here in the last few days. I wonder if the sanctuary city, I wonder if they're going to become a sanctuary city. probably can't see that coming, but who knows? Cadillac seems awful hypocritical of me if they don't. Hypocritical of them, it seems to me, if they don't. Cadillac was also generous to Bill Gates. Nope, I just read that. In September 2019, less than a month before COVID-19 began circulating, the Gates Foundation made a $55 million pre-IPO equity investment in biotech. The company also had never brought a single product to market. Soon afterward, the German government followed Gates with a $455 million infusion into BioNTech. On July 21, 2020, with Robert Cadillac committed Operation Warp Speed with a $2 billion purchase of 100 million doses of BioNTech Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine, the company's stock value soared. Imagine that. With Bill Gates' equity sharing increasing to an evaluation of $1.1 billion. Snobville is in an uproar. I bet they are, Mark. In October 2020, Emergent became one of the four companies collaborating on the clinical trial with a combination treatment regimen that included Dr. Fauci's drug remdesivir as a background therapy. The company said in a statement, Emergent is proud to continue our relationship with NIAID, NIH, and BARDA to advance potential therapeutic solutions for COVID-19 in hospitalization patients. I wonder if they just shipped them all to like New York or something, or Boston. I wonder if they're still there. Knows. Bill Gates owned a large stake in remdesivir's manufacturer, Gilead. The WHO's own studies show clearly, as even the WHO acknowledged, that remdesivir was useless against COVID. Worse, the drug's extreme toxicity, remdesivir side effects mimic a late-stage symptoms of COVID. Many actually aggravate the severity of the illness. To overcome these obstacles, Dr. Fauci financed and rigged a suite of flawed illness. Dr. Fauci financed and rigged a suite of flawed illness to overcome these obstacles. Why am I going over the same thing? Flawed studies to suggest, deceptively, that remdesivir might slightly reduce the numbers of days a patient would stay in a hospital. The WHO's much larger studies proved that there was no reduction in length of hospital stay. Nevertheless, orchestrated research, Dr. Fauci then forced remdesivir's approval through FDA as standard of care for COVID. At the same time, Dr. Fauci and Bill Gates were financing and promoting studies to discredit chloroquine and hydroxychloroquine and sabotage ivermectin, two effective COVID remedies that posed an existential threat to remdesivir and the entire Fauci-Gates COVID vaccine enterprise. Emergent CEO Robert Kramer boasted to Wall Street analysts in February 2021 that the year had been the strongest year in our 22-year history. The New York Times reported that Emergent stock had reached such a zenith that Fouad El-Hibri cashed in shares and options worth $42 million. more than he had redeemed in the previous 5 years combined. When in April 2021, Emergence BioSolutions ruined 15 million Johnson & Johnson COVID-19 vaccines due to quality control mishaps at its poorly managed Baltimore production facility, Congress launched an investigation into whether Emergent used high-level connections to get billions of dollars in federal contracts despite a history of failing to deliver satisfactorily on its contracts. Congressional investigators also raised concerns about Emergent's inadequate staff training, persistent quality control issues, and the company stiffing the government with an unjustified 800% price increase for its anthrax vaccine. The Democratic chairs of the House Committee on Oversight and Reform and Select Oversight Committee on the Coronavirus Crisis focused their inquiry on Cadillac's role. In a letter, the committee chairs complained that Cadillac appeared to have pushed for the $628 million award to Emergent to develop a COVID-19 vaccine factory, despite indications that Emergent did not have the ability to reliably fulfill the contract. At the top, as the top dog among the COVID-19 pandemic's government managers, Cadillac had promoted Emergent as the United States' primary vaccine manufacturing facility. In April 2021, The Times published another extensive expose reporting that Emergent had not yet been able to produce a single acceptable dose of any COVID-19 vaccine. Following exposés in the New York Times and the Washington Post, Johnson & Johnson took over the production at that plant. The FDA stepped in after inspecting the facility and ordered Emergent to halt all production of materials for COVID-19 vaccines, pending a review and remediation, and to quarantine all existing materials. Well, I guess this is a good place for a break here. Mark my spot. Good place for the first break, I guess. So, let's see here. Go through a list. I think about a 5 minute and 22 second song break will be good for the first 30 minutes in. So I'll be back in about 5.5 minutes, everyone.
You could see what I once was if you could go with me back to where I started from. And
Okay, welcome back, everyone. Glad you enjoyed the song, Mom. I do, too. HHS ordered Emergent to discard millions of contaminated doses of its defective vaccines to... I'm sorry, I gotta read that over. HHS ordered Emergent to discard millions of contaminated doses. Instead, in March 2021, the company shipped millions of doses of its defective vaccines to Canada, Europe, South Africa, and Mexico. That was awful nice of them. The House Select Subcommittee on the Coronavirus Crisis held a hearing on May 19, 2021 and ordered Emergent to turn over all its federal contracts since 2015 and all communications with Robert Cadillac. Emergent's political invincibility left the companies unbowed by all those scandals. In July 2020, Emergent announced a five-year, $450 million deal to manufacture COVID drugs for Johnson & Johnson. In the February 2021, HHS awarded Emergent another contract, this one worth up to $22 million to develop COVID-19 therapy. Atlantic Storm, 2003-2005. In January 2003 and again in 2005, a cabal of U.S. and European military intelligence and medical officials germ-gamed another exercise they called Atlantic Storm. Thomas V. Higglesby and the Spooks, Tara O'Toole and Colonel Randall J. Larson were the simulation's principal authors. Both the 1999 HHS smallpox simulation and the June 2001 dark winter smallpox simulation focused ominously not on public health but on the quandary of how to impose control over U.S. and global populations during public health emergencies, how to sweep away civil rights and impose mass obedience to military and medical technocrats. Atlantic Storm further probed the sinister disquisition. I don't even know what that word is. Never seen it before. Maybe it's a misprint, supposed to be distinguished. I don't know. Disquisitions. Never seen that word before. High-level government figures, including Madeleine Albright, playing the President of the United States and the WHO Director General Gro Harlem Brundtland. That sounds like a German name, a Nazi name. Playing herself, hosted a summit of transatlantic militaries, military and intelligence agency planners, coordinating responses after a radical terrorist band unleashed smallpox. According to the after-action report, the key issues for summit principals were coping with scarcity of critical medical resources such as vaccines. And assuring a uniform coordination response among all governments in the world. The simulation stressed the inadequacy and current multilateral framework like NATO and the EU to cope with social, economic, and political disruption from an international epidemic, be it natural or a result of a bioterrorist attack, and emphasize the importance of developing systems to coordinate global lockstep security protocols that went beyond just stockpiling vaccines or training more doctors. Characteristically, the assembled eminences bypassed by discussion of bolstering people's immune system response or testing the distributing of off-label therapeutics, and went directly to recommending militarized strategies, including police state controls, mass propaganda, and censorship, and the suspension of civil rights and due process rulemaking in favor of dictates by health authorities, all aimed at coercive vaccination of the population. These scenarios, which health officials and spooks conceived of and gained back in 2005, became our collective reality in 2020 and 2021. Global Mercury 2003. Between September 8th and 10th of that same year, the spooks at the U.S. State Department Office of the Coordinator for Counterterrorism organized another scenario exercise dubbed Global Mercury, with the CDC, the NIH, and the FDA, and the WHO, and the Department of State. Over a 56-hour period, public health technocrats coordinated common communications and lockstep response between trusted agents from the GHSAG nations, United States, the UK, Canada, France, Germany, Italy, Japan, and Mexico. During a simulated outbreak of self-inoculated terrorists spread smallpox through two countries around the world. The SCL simulation, 2005. Atlantic Storm and Global Mercury were additional loud notes amplifying persistent Pentagon signals that biosecurity was the emerging growth sector for national defense. In response to such toxins, spelled with a C, T-O-C-S-I-N. I wonder if that's a misprint. Private military contractors began thronging to the pandemic surveillance and psyops sector like hogs to a corn crib. Long before Robert Mercer, with his daughter Rebecca, became Donald Trump's biggest private donors, and before they launched the right-wing social media platform, Parler, he created the first private sector provider of psychological warfare services in 1993. The Mercer Strategic Communication Laboratories, SCL Group, was the parent company of the notorious data manufacturing firm Cambridge Analytica. This brand new PsyOps firm, headquartered in the UK, drew some of the largest crowds in 2005. When they set up a high-tech propaganda op center at the UK's annual military technology showcase. As a contemporary article in Slate described the SCL simulation, classic signs of smallpox are threatening a pandemic of epic proportions when a shadowy media firm steps in to help orchestrate a sophisticated campaign of mass deception. SEL takes on the task of convincing the entire country's population to comply with lockdown rules by inventing a lie about an unleashed cloud of toxic chemicals. The mission's objective is to prevent mass panic and casualties from a classified threat of smallpox. SCL feeds disinformation to the press and manufactures medical data. Londoners stay indoors, convinced that even a short walk in the streets could be fatal. Well, this is like 450 pages, and every single inch of every page is being used. It'll probably take a week nonstop just to read it, and then reread it, Mark. And then reread it again. Lost my spot. Where was I? The article continues, if SCL weren't so earnest, it might actually seem to be mocking itself, or perhaps George Orwell. At the end of the smallpox scenario, dramatic music fades out of the tape message, using buyers to embrace strategic communications, which it describes as the most powerful weapon in the world. What makes SCL strategy so unusual is that it proposes to propagate its campaign domestically, or at least some of the time, and rather than influence just opinion, it wants people to take a particular course of action. The company based its PSYOP strategies on propaganda techniques developed by a virtual lab called Behavioral Dynamics Institute, run out of Leeds University by Professor Phil Taylor, a consultant to UK and American defense agencies until his death at 56 in 2010. The article identified SCL only as a... Sorry about that. I'm just going to start right here because I forgot where I was. The company based its PSYOP strategies on propaganda techniques developed by a virtual lab called Behavioral Dynamics Institute, run out of Leeds University by Professor Phil Taylor, a consultant to UK and American defense agencies until his death at 56 in 2010. The article identified SCL only as funded by private investors. Company chief Nigel Oakes described its nefarious skullduggery as mind-bending for political purposes. In a March 20, 2018 interview with Yahoo Finance, Oakes described himself as a man without much of an ethical radar. According to SCL's public affairs director, Mark Broughton, basically, we're launching ourselves on the defense market and homeland security market at the same time. Aware of the company might face criticism over its promotion of totalitarian security states, Broughton emphasized to Slate the company's role in saving lives. There is some altruism in it, he said grudgingly. But we also want to earn money. No, that wasn't Roger. I think that was a telemarketer. It had a Michigan number on it. So, I don't know if they're going to leave a message or not. Probably will. My spot again. Okay. how war games became instruments for imposing obedience. No, Annie, Roger called me a couple hours ago. So I knew it wouldn't be him again. How war games became instruments for imposing obedience. Dark Winter, Atlantic Storm, and Global Mercury were only three of over a dozen germ games staged by military, medical, and intelligence planners leading up to COVID-19. Each of these, oh my goodness, Kafkaesque, where he comes up with some of these words. Exercises became uncanny predictors of a dystopian age that pandemic planners dubbed the new normal. The consistent feature of an affinity among their simulation designers for militarizing medical and introducing centralized autocratic governance. Each rehearsal ends with the same grim punchline. The global pandemic is an excuse to justify the imposition of tyranny and coerced vaccination. The repetition of these exercises suggests that they serve as a kind of rehearsal or training drill for an underlying agenda to coordinate the global dismantling and democratic governance. Military intelligence analytics first introduced scenario planning as a strategic device during World War II. RAND's iconic military planner, Hermann Kahn, used sophisticated war game simulations to model nuclear engagement strategies in the Cold War era. Working for a Royal Dutch Shell futurologist, Pierre Wack, that's a great name, and Peter Schwartz of the Global Business Network, GBN, pioneered scenario planning simulations of a strategic device for its corporate clients in the 1970s and 1980s. By the millennium, simulations had evolved into an indispensable vehicle for military policy makers, intelligence agency planners, public health technocrats, and the petroleum and pharmaceutical multinationals for reinforcing prescribed responses that allow predictable and rigid control of the outcomes of future crises. And we'll take a 10-second break here and get something to drink. I don't even know if anybody can leave a message on Skype. I guess they probably can. But I've never had anyone leave a message. At least a voice message, anyways. Military intelligence analyst first introduced scenario planning as a strategic device during World War II. I read that already. Okay. After 9/11, the rising biosecurity cartel adopted simulations as a signaling mechanism for choreographic lockstep response among corporate, political, and military technocrats charged with managing global exigencies. Scenario planning became an indispensable device for multiple power centers to coordinate complex strategies for simultaneously imposing coercive controls upon democratic societies across the globe. Virtually all of the scenario planning for pandemics employ technical assumptions and strategies familiar to anyone who has read the CIA's notorious psychological warfare manuals foreshadowing indigenous societies. Obliterating national economies and social bonds for using imposed isolation and the demolition of traditional economies to crush resistance, to foster chaos, demoralization, dependence, and fear, and for imposing centralized and autocratic governance. In particular, the exercises incorporated PSYOP techniques gleaned from the notorious Milgram obedience experiments. In those 1960s exercises, Yale social psychology professor Dr. Stanley Milgram was able to show that researchers could why don't you pick words that actually exist? Good grief. Formulaically. Manipulate the ordinary citizens from all walks of life to violate their own conscience and commit atrocities, so long as the authority figure, a doctor in a white lab coat, ordered them to do so. The subjects believed they were torturing fellow volunteers by electrocuting out of sight in an adjacent room. As the doctor instructed them to rev up the juice, the recruits could hear the nightmarish screaming of actors pretending to be suffering electrocution and their pleadings of mercy. Of Milgram's 40 subjects, some 65% administered a full bore 450-volt shocks that had been told were potentially fatal. Milgram described his experiments as proof that obedience to authority trumps moral and conscience. Yeah, I know that's true. Because he's a snob boy. If I ever get to talk to him, I'll tell him you said that, Mark. Snob Martha Vineyard. Martha's Vineyard. Stark authority was pitted against the subject's strongest moral imperatives against hurting others, and which the subject's ears ringing with the screams of the victims. Authority won more often than not. The extreme willingness of adults to go to almost any lengths of the command of the authority constitutes the chief finding of the study. He probably asked, what does snob mean, Mark? I don't know. In his book, A Question of Torture, CIA I'm about to spill something. I need to clean it up quick. Sorry for this. I about spilled something and had to clean it up. All over my mixer. I could just see it short-circuiting something if I didn't. And now to find out where I was again. Okay. In his book, A Question of Torture, CIA Interrogation, From the Cold War to the War on Terror, University of Wisconsin historian Alfred W. McCoy suggests that the Yale obedience experiments were funded by the CIA as part of the MKUltra studies on the control of human behavior. During that time, the CIA funneled money through various federal agencies to fund 185 independent researchers to perform sinister behavioral manipulation studies at universities across North America. Milgram first proposed his obedience research in a 1960 solicitation of the group's psychological branch of the Office of Naval Research, ONR. The key conduit was the CIA's MK-Ultra mind control experiments. The dean who hired Milgram, later as a professor at City University of New York, was a former deputy director of ONR. Milgram's Yale mentor was Irving L. Janis, who wrote the seminal Air Force study on Soviet mind control and hypnosis for the RAND Corporation. Milgram's other connections to the CIA psychological warfare program are too numerous to mention here. Okay. Good place to take a break, since we're almost at the hour. Where is my... All right, there's my Sam. Where's my marker? I'm losing everything. I need a break. I think a couple of short songs here. Add up to about 5 minutes, everyone. Be right back.
Oh, believe in what I say. Troubles all will vanish.
Oh, fancy text generator for Chat Tango, I guess, huh? Are you on a mobile or something, Moon Girl? None of us on the PC have that kind of an option. Yeah, that's just weird, though, because on the PC, you don't have that option for some reason, or I don't know. This Chat Tango version. I don't know what's going on there. I believe we are getting close, so maybe just next week, might be finishing this book off, or the week after that, or something. Have to see. I guess it's the second hour, so I will mention again, please hit the donate button if you like what we're doing here. In an equally important revelation, the CIA mind control experiments identified social isolation and the primary protocol for controlling societal and individual behavior. In 1960, one of the agency's most active contractors, I just thought of something there, you know, this isolation from societies and all that stuff was... Well, they started inventing computer games just after that to keep us from going crazy in our homes. So I guarantee you 40, 50 years ago, people would have gone crazy. The CIA's research found that the effect on isolation on the brain function on an individual is much like that which occurs if he is beaten, starved, or deprived of sleep. Social isolation affects organic brain development and the human body, length of life, cardiovascular health, and so on. Social isolation doubles the risk of death in blacks while increasing the risk of early death in Caucasians by 60 to 84%. While other studies show that it is safer to smoke 15 cigarettes a day or to be an alcoholic than to be socially isolated. Not surprising there at all. Meta-analysis, co-authored by Julian Holt Lundstedt, PhD, a professor of psychology and neuroscience at Brigham Young University, found that lack of social connection heightens health risk as much as smoking 15 cigarettes a day or having alcohol use disorder. Holt Lundstedt also found that social isolation is twice as harmful to physical and mental health as obesity. There is robust evidence that social isolation significantly increases risk for premature mortality, and the magnitude of the risk exceeds that of many leading health indicators. That's coming from the study. NIH's collaboration with the CIA in those odious torture, obedience, and brainwashing experiments heaps additional ignominy of the agency. I-G-N-O-M-I-N-Y. Ignominy. During the 1950s, NIH scientist Dr. Maitland Baldwin conducted social isolation experiments on monkeys and humans at the NIH headquarters and CIA safe houses. MKUltra's experiments used expendables, people whose deaths or disappearance would go unnoticed, including a rather gruesome experiment in which Baldwin had subjected a soldier to 40 hours of isolation, causing him to go insane and to kick apart the box in which Maitland imprisoned him. Maitland, who told his Operation Artichoke case officer that isolating subjects for over 40 hours could cause irreparable damage and perhaps be terminal, nevertheless agreed to go forward if the agency could provide cover and subjects. The various scenario planning simulations provide a unique forum to convey key decision makers and to introduce them to sanction with authoritative voices. Previously unspeakable conduct that violated democratic and ethical norms. That conduct included the forced isolation and quarantine of entire populations, including the healthy, censoring free speech, violating privacy with tracks and trace surveillance systems, trampling property rights and religious freedoms, and obliterating traditional economies via nationwide business lockdowns, enforced masking, coercive medical interventions, and other assaults on human rights, civil rights, constitutions, and democracies. With each new simulation, the staccato repetition of the message by trusted experts, doctors in lab coats, and authoritative collectives like Secretary of State Madeleine Halfbright, Senator Sam Nunn, WHO Director General Gro Harlem Brundtland, and Senator Tom Daschle reinforced the lesson that censorship, isolation, and militarization of medicine, totalitarian controls, and the coercive vaccine mandates are the only appropriate response to pandemics. Scenario planning, in other words, is a potential brainwashing technique for creating and fortifying anti-democratic orthodoxies among key political leaders, the press, the technocracy, and preparing the nation to tolerate a coup d'etat against its constitution without resistance. Lockstep Simulation 2010. In 2009, President Obama declared biosecurity as a spear tip of U.S. foreign policy, dispersing memos to all government agencies, instructing them to integrate biosecurity to their mission. By 2010, U.S. spy agencies were demonstrating a growing interest in vaccines as a foreign policy instrument, just as the Cold War and later on the War on Terror had rationalized U.S. military presence across the world as a bulwark against brushfire nationalist rebellions and reportedly orchestrated by the communist monolith. Vaccination programs could justify interventions with developing countries with high disease burdens as a tool for social and political control. In 2010, the WHO pronounced biosecurity as the centerpiece of its approach for managing global risk. That same month, as Bill Gates delivered its decade of vaccine speech at the UN Biosecurity, the war on microbes was almost ellipsing the war on Islamic terrorism as a preferred driver of the security state cartel. A few days later, Peter Schwartz authored a scenario report funded by the Rockefeller Foundation titled Scenarios for the Future of Technology and International Development. A section called Lockstep reinforced the burgeoning orthodoxy that rigid global tyranny was the antidote for infectious disease. In 2012, the pandemic that the world had been anticipating for years finally hit. Unlike 2009's N1H1, this new influenza strain originated from wild geese. While extremely virulent and deadly, yeah, I'm sure, like a 99.774% survival rate, maybe. Even the most pandemic-prepared nations were quickly overwhelmed when the virus streaked across the world, infecting nearly 20% of the global population and killing 8 million in just 7 months. Sounds like Hollywood fear-mongering there. The pandemic also had a deadly effect on economies. International mobility of both people and goods screeched to a halt, debilitating industries like tourism and breaking global supply chain. Even locally, normally bustling shops and office buildings sat empty for months, devoid of both employees and customers. During the pandemic, national leaders around the world flexed their authority and imposed airtight rules and restrictions, from the mandatory wearing of face masks to body temperature checks at the entries of casual spaces like train stations and supermarkets. Even after the pandemic faded, these more authoritarian control and oversight of citizens and their activities stuck and even intensified. In order to protect themselves from the spread of increasingly global problems, from pandemics and transnational terrorism, of environmental crisis and rising poverty, leaders around the world took a firmer grip on power. That was from the report. Schwartz's chilling document goes on to predict that citizens terrified by germs and orchestrated propaganda willingly relinquish their civil and constitutional rights. The population, Schwartz predicts, will not start rebelling against the new tyranny and authoritarian clampdowns for more than 10 years. That's not good. We need to drastically reduce that hypothesis there, that's for sure. Intelligence agencies left their fingerprints all over these scenario planning exercises. Schwartz, like O'Toole, Larson, Cadillac, and Woolsey, and David is one of the many leading promoters of weaponized vaccines as a foreign policy tool, with deep connections to the intelligence apparatus. Schwartz's resume chronicles multiple touch points with spy agencies before and after he authored the Lockstep scenario. In 1972, Schwartz joined the Stanford Research Institute, later SRI International, an early pioneer in computer technology and artificial intelligence. Schwartz rose to SRI Strategic Environmental Center at the time when SRI was hosting the CIA's notorious MKUltra program and actively researching psychological warfare, including the sophisticated use of propaganda, torture, and psychiatric chemicals to shatter societies and impose centralized control. Schwartz left to become head of the scenario planning for the Royal Dutch Shell. He then co-founded the Global Business Network, GBN, in 1987 as a corporate consultant specializing in analyzing intelligence and in future think strategies. Shell Oil was GBN's highest revenue client. In the early 1990s, Ken McCarthy, who would become the early pioneer of the practical efforts to commercialize the internet, met Schwartz at a large Thanksgiving gathering in a remote location in rural Harris, California. Schwartz introduced himself to McCarthy as an anthropology graduate from Princeton, and Schwartz began probing McCarthy's interest in being recruited for a contract with an unnamed West African country that involved weakening tribal and family structures on the behalf of a federal government. Recalling the encounter, McCarthy told me, "I found Schwartz's proposal intensely disturbing." Schwartz dismayed McCarthy's qualms as naive. McCarthy says, "It made a lasting impression on me, so much so that I've recounted the story many times over the years." Schwartz's client, Shell Oil, had extensive oil holdings in the Ogoni region of Nigeria. In 1995, the Nigerian government executed Ogoni environmental leader, writer and television producer Ken Soro Wiwa, and 8 other environmental organizers based on charges that they had incited violence. Soro Wiwa's arrest, trial by a military tribunal, and subsequent execution followed a harassment campaign against him and other Ogoni environmental leaders, which started in 1993 after they repeatedly mobilized peaceful demonstrations against Shell, attracting over 300,000 of the region's total population of 600,000. The United Nations General Assembly and the European Union condemned Soro Wiwa's execution. Yeah, they knew about it, but they didn't do anything about it beforehand. Guarantee it. And the United Nations recalled its ambassador to Nigeria. In 1993, Schwartz, along with the Stewart brand and Nicholas Negroponte, was one of the driving forces behind the funding of the Wired magazine, which became the central clearinghouse for mainstream news coverage on the burgeoning online ecosystem. Wired quickly earned notoriety as a clearinghouse for intelligence agency chatter. Prior to Wired, Mondo 2000, the Bay Area's original tech and culture magazine, reflected the progressive, idealistic viewpoints of many of the pioneer tech innovators. In contrast, Wired, which appropriated Mondo's 2000's look and feel, and no small number of its employees glorified military and intelligence agencies, celebrities, and corporate CEOs who happened to be clients of Nicholas Negroponte, Negroponte's MIT lab. Wired gained snowballing prominence in the early 2000s as the same time that the CIA launched its notorious investigation firm, NQTEL, to infiltrate the tech industries and put Silicon Valley on steroids with easy terms and government contracts. Scenario planner Tara O'Toole served as NQTEL's executive vice president. It's worth recalling here that the defense and intelligence agencies had a beachhead in the tech industry from its birth, the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, DARPA, created the internet by building the ARPANET CRID in 1969. DARPA is the Pentagon's angel investor and venture fund. In addition to creating the internet, DARPA developed GPS, stealth bombers, weather satellites, pilotless drones, and the M16 rifle. DARPA was perhaps the largest funder of the gain-of-function research, out of stripping even Dr. Fauci's NIH in some years. In 2017 alone, DARPA launched at least DARPA laundered at least $6.5 million through Peter Daszak's EcoHealth Alliance to fund experiments at the Wuhan lab. DARPA funded additional gain-of-function experiments at Fort Detrick and other biosecurity research at Battelle's laboratory in St. Joseph, Missouri. Beginning in 2013, DARPA also financed the key technologies for the Moderna vaccine. In 2002, DARPA set off a firestorm among human rights advocates from the left and right by creating a comprehensive data mining system under President Reagan's National Security Advisor, Admiral John Poindexter. Public protest forced DARPA to scuttle that project, but critics have accused the agency of using the technology to help launch Facebook. Yeah, of course they did. By remarkable coincidence, he should have put that in quotations, but he didn't, because it is a remarkable coincidence. DARPA shut down its Facebook-like launch project, LifeLog, a venture that involved MIT contractors, the very same month, February 2004, that Mark Zuckerberg started Facebook. Just a 30-minute walk up the Charles River in Cambridge, Massachusetts, on the campus of Harvard University. In 2010, DARPA's visionary director, Dr. Regina Dugan, moved to Google as an executive, and in 2016, she transferred to Google's competitor, Facebook, running a numerous project called Building 8. Building 8. In 2018, she moved again to run Wellcome Leap, a health technology breakthrough innovation project of Wellcome Trust. Her peregrinations offer another example of the incestuous links between big tech, big pharma, and the military and intelligence agencies. And time for the last break here, everyone. So. Don't forget to mark my spot. Let's see here. I think just a 6-minute song here. Be back in about 6 minutes, everyone.
Yeah.
Okay, welcome back. About the last 20 minutes here, everyone. Are we having fun with this simulation that they call life and society? This experiment that went awry some 6,000 years ago. According to veteran CIA officer Kevin Shipp, Silicon Valley CEOs who accepted NQTEL contracts would become some of the 4.8 million Americans subsequently pressured into signing CIA state secret contracts. Cue spooky music. Dun, dun, dun. Which subject signatories to 20-year prison sentences, property forfeitures, and other draconian reprisals imposed by secret courts for even minor violations of arbitrary provisions, including admitting to signing the contract. Once he signs the secret agreement, that silicone Valley entrepreneur is now functionally the indentured servant of the agency. It binds him and his company for life, and the agreement itself is classified. Sign here and you don't exist anymore, or we'll make sure you don't exist anymore, pretty much. But we'll make you rich though. Wired's seed funding came from MIT Media Lab founder Nicholas Negroponte, whose brother John Negroponte was the first director of National Intelligence, notorious for his support of Central American death squads. Wired's central function was to scrub every last particle of progressive thinking from reporting on the then developing online world and to promote only pro-military, pro-corporate, pro-intelligence agency view within the digital media and the technological community. According to McCarthy, who lived and worked in San Francisco in the 1990s and organized the first conference on monetizing the web, when he saw his first copy of Wired, Dr. Timothy Leary reported called it the CIA's answer to Mondo 2000. In 2015, Wired emerged as a promoter of a particular brand of autism epidemic denial known as neurodiversity. By normalizing autism as neurodiversity, this movement seeks to dilute autism numbers, deny the vaccine association, and promote the larger view that all vaccines are safe and vaccine injuries are the delusions of crackpots. This movement has spawned an army of activists, trolls weaponized to attack autism researchers, advocacy groups, and even families of vaccine-injured children. Steve Silberman, a writer for Wired since 2010, published the book Neuro Tribes in the 2015 to massive acclaim and highly orchestrated publicity. It became the manifesto for the new autism rights movement, which also demonized medical freedom and food safety advocates. Its tactics include online attacks and aggressive disruption of public events, including conferences and film screenings. Wired is also the fountainhead of the equally sinister movement, transhumanism, which advocates for the integration of human beings and machines. the movement's ancillary aims include extending the lifespans of key Silicon Valley billionaires' identity and liberating humanity from biological restraints using AI novel therapies like stem cells and nanobots, vaccination, and subdermal chips. Jacques Ellul, an early like stem cells and nanobots vaccination and subsequent chip. I just read that. An early pioneer described transhumanism's elegant capacity for top-down control of humanity. The Borg. Resistance is futile. In other words, for the psycho-civilized society and the complete joining of man and machine will be culminated according to a strict system. The so-called biocracy, it will be impossible to escape this system of adaptation. All right. Yeah. Adaption. Adaption. Is that a misprint? Adaption? Or is that a word? Because it will be articulated with so much scientific understanding of the human being. The individual will have no more need for conscience and virtues. His moral and mental furnishing will be a matter of a biocrat's decision. Transhumanism, in its various doctrinal approaches, has fervent accolades among the Silicon Valley elites, including C-suite titans as Microsoft, Facebook, Tesla's Elon Musk, Google Engineering Director Raymond Kurzweil, PayPal founder Peter Thiel, satellite and biotech titan Martin Rothblatt, and Bill Gates. NQTEL has made transhumanism one of the persistent themes of its long-term investment strategies. A celebration of transhumanism from NQTEL's website. Not everyone is a fan. Francis Fukuyama has called the transhumanism movement the greatest threat to humanity. Schwartz served as a consultant in the 1998 sci-fi disaster film Deep Impact and the 1992 futuristic film Minority Report. Jesus, that's been 30 years already? Whew. Which followers of Special Pre-Crime Police Unit are able to arrest murderers before they commit their crimes. Emerging reality seldom disappoints Schwartz's past predictions. In 2020, a Chinese whistleblower revealed that the Chinese government has widely developed facial recognition technologies that can detect guilty thoughts against dissent minority groups. In March 3, 2021, an article in The Guardian predicts that demands by the government enforcement agencies will make remote emotion detection technologies a $36 billion dollar industry by 2023. Schwartz's arguing skills are legendary. One of his early plots for GBN's scenarios tested strategies by the major airline for surviving a coronavirus pandemic. Time magazine's 2004 profile focused on Schwartz's unerring prognosticating. Very rarely have we really missed, he told Time of his forecasting. More often our failure is in getting people to take it seriously. The Time article mentioned one of his most impressive fortune telling stunts in 2020 as part of a study for the Senate Commission. Swartz predicted the horrifying possibility of terrorists flying planes into the World Trade Center. In 2016, as Senior Vice President of Strategic Planning at Salesforce.com, Swartz chaired a session at the World Government Summit titled, How Governments Get Ready for the Unthinkable. 3,000 participants from 125 countries attended that year. Barack Obama delivered the keynote speech. Klaus Schwab, President of the World Economic Forum and head of the World Bank, put a happy face on global crisis as a potential push, as a potential path to the cashless society so covered by international banksters. The digital currency is in the way of the future. In 2014, Swartz conducted an offstage interview by Schwab at the Salesforce conference on the future of global governance, following a speech by Hillary Clinton, in which the two men forecast the merger of new devices with the human brain, allowing machinery to control our brains with our souls and our hearts. They applauded the concept of biology as part of a new technological and scientific revolution, and praise the capacity of the internet to integrate in a continuous interaction with the machinery of the human mind to control aberrant and criminal behavior, i.e. dissent, and to challenge people's sacred identities. Swartz describes a machine-driven evolution that will supplant emotional intelligences with knowledge and data. According to Schwab, a new intelligence will be distributed and, of course, will accelerate even more technological progress. If you combine, let's say, brain research with big data, you have fantastic new areas with tremendous application for controlling behavior. Swartz lauds Salesforce as a participant in this process. As a chief futures officer for Salesforce, Swartz currently markets a vaccine management software platform that allows government to track, trace, and monetize and enforce vaccine compliance among global populations. An autumn 2021 video describes the latest factors impacting our ability to move out of multiple pandemic-driven global crises, and promotes Salesforce software as a solution. Swartz predicts a dystopian future in which ever-involving mutant strains of SARS-CoV-2 drive skyrocketing death rate curves, and presumably ballooning big pharma profits, making the race between the vaccines and the virus the conflict that will define the world economy and civilization's future. Sounds like it's going to be fun. The Salesforce system is elaborate and provides local governments the ability to establish a credential ID system. The NQTEL markets a competitive technology, BNext, for tracking and tracing facility pandemic management. Given the reality of the capacity of most government information technology departments, national, state, and local, it's fair to say that without Salesforce.com, NQTEL and other companies like IBM, the planning and execution of population-wide vaccination programs of the kind Dr. Fauci and others call for would be logistically impossible, says McCarthy. Training Day for Tyranny. By 2020, the Fauci-Gates partnership was spearheading the globalist biosecurity agenda, Bill Gates began partnering with military and intelligence planners to stage regular follow-up simulations. Each successive drill repeated the narrative of Schwartz's lockstep scenario for different audiences of key power brokers. These exercises served as devices for planners to rehearse their schemes with critical functionaries and to coordinate communications and choreograph the actions of diverse government, industry, military, intelligence, energy, and financial power centers in their lockstep march to replace the constitutional democracy with authoritarian plutocracy. The global war against infectious diseases provided the rationale for oppressive government and corporate interventions. The arsenal for this war is the endless batteries of mandated vaccines to combat a disease weaponized by gain-of-function experiments and marketed by sophisticated government corporate propaganda. In February 2017, Gates told the Munich Security Conference, the leading global convention of international security policy, that we ignore the link between health security and international security at our peril. He warned that a highly lethal global pandemic will occur in our lifetimes by a quirk of nature or at the hand of a terrorist. The world needs to prepare for epidemics the way the military prepares for war. Mars, M-A-R-S, 2017. By mid-2017, the Rockefeller Foundation and intelligence agency planners had passed to Bill Gates their baton as a primary funder and frontman for the military intelligence community's increasingly regular pandemic simulations. In May, the health ministries for the world's wealthiest 20, G20, nations assembled for the first time, gathering in Berlin to participate in a joint exercise scenario with an imagined China responding to a contagion dubbed MARS for Mountain-Associated Respiratory Virus. That's quite interesting there. Mars is also a Roman god of war. German governmental institutions collaborated to produce the simulation with the Gates Foundation, the Rockefeller Foundation, and the World Bank, the WHO, and the Robert Koch Institute. The ministries hailed from the United States, Russia, India, China, Britain, France, Germany, Canada, Argentina, Brazil, Korea, Mexico, Saudi Arabia, Indonesia, South Africa, Turkey, and the European Union. The exercises, two moderators also worked closely with the Gates Foundation. David Heyman served simultaneously as the chair of the UK Center on Global Health Security and an epidemiologist with the Gates-founded London School of Hygienic and Tropical Medicine. Heyman also sits with Moderna CEO Stephanie Bancel. On the Miro Foundation, USA board, BioMiro is the French company that built the Wuhan lab. Throughout the COVID-19 pandemic, Heyman has chaired the WHO Scientific Technology Advisory Group for Infectious Hazards. The other moderator of the 2017 simulation was Professor Ilona Kickbush, a member of Gates' Global Preparedness Monitoring Board. Over 2 days, the Global Health Ministry officials and other guest countries and international representatives bore witness to a timeline of the unfolding pandemic known as MARS, a novel respiratory virus spread by busy markets in a mountainous border region of an unnamed but China-like country. Unnamed China-like country. Yeah. Two nations around the globe. Only draconian clampdowns by neighboring governments and heroic WHO technocrats orchestrating a tightly choreographed centralized global response save humanity with a chaotic dystopian apocalypse. In an hour-long documentary about the event, German journalist Paul Schreier shows the health ministry is intently studying the assimilation exercises. When we look at the picture, Schreier says, we might comprehend a bit better why in today's crisis most of the countries are proceeding very coordinatedly, and why in every country more or less the same is acted out. They are given the same general recipes and procedural instructions that are now being realized in a synchronized way. That's because they're all in on it together. They're all on the same page. That's why. And the think tanks say so. So that must be the truth. All right, everyone, that's all for today. So just a short song to end here and say thanks for staying out and hope you come back tomorrow for me and Roger. Till next time, everyone.